Is there a member of House Manwoody in the game?
Oh, yeah. Why did I forget that question?
Manwoody?
You are listening to the podcast of Ice and Fire, episode 70 for the week of March 4th, 2012. Welcome back, listeners, to yet another episode of the podcast of Ice and Fire. This week we're bringing you something quite a bit different from our usual formula of rereads and recaps. We are actually doing an interview for this particular podcast episode. It's just me and Amin today, and we are interviewing two guys from Atlas who are publishing the upcoming Game of Thrones RPG, Aram and Scott. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
So why don't you go ahead and tell our listeners a little bit about yourselves individually and what you guys do as far as work on the game.
Oh, well, my name's Aram Jabari. I'm the PR manager here at Atlas. I come in on the weekends. I clean the bathrooms. Every now and then I write a press release. Specifically when it comes to Game of Thrones, my job is obviously to try to get awareness and the word out there. I'm not as intimately involved with the project as the gentleman to my immediate left, and I'll let him introduce himself because everything that comes out of his mouth on this podcast is far more important than anything that comes out of mine.
I'm Scott Williams. I'm the QA lead on the game. Basically, my whole job has been to make sure that the game is going to be as good as possible for everybody coming out. Everything from making sure that we get bugs fixed, to making sure that the dialogue is good, to making sure that the script for the game is good, making sure that everything is graphically sound. Basically, all the nuts and bolts are going to be perfect for when it's finally released.
And I want to add that Scott is a very busy man right now. We are, you know, even though the game is set for a May 15th release, the crunch time begins now, and he and the rest of the QA team are pretty hard at work. He's been a bit of a blur the last few days. So I personally want to thank him for taking time aside to be able to do this.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for coming to the podcast and sitting down with us and going over some of this. Out of curiosity, do you guys have read the books or watched the TV show?
I have read all of the books, most of them twice.
Okay.
I have only watched it on HBO. So if there are going to be any shocking spoilers, I'm guessing you guys won't do anything big from any of the later books.
No, we won't.
Destroying my soul.
No, we'll stick to the first season then. First book.
Yeah.
We actually have a lot of folks here who work on the game who've read all the books that are out. And I think one of the reasons we got involved with the project was because we had folks here who were pretty diehard.
We're pretty excited about the games that have been coming. I know there was already that strategy game, Game of Thrones Genesis, that Cyanide Studios developed. So would you say that this is a bigger game as far as the content?
Very much so. It's important to make a couple of distinctions. While both of the titles, the strategy game that was PC download only earlier last year and the upcoming RPG are developed by Cyanide Studios, they're actually two separate entities under that umbrella. Two development teams who are completely mutually exclusive from each other in terms of staff. Actually, one's in Montreal and the other's in Paris. And Game of Thrones, the RPG, is by far the premier game using the license that they acquired. And the folks at Cyanide, they acquired the Game of Thrones license by actually approaching George Martin years ago, before the HBO show was even went into production. And they started two projects when they sat down with him and they told him their vision. But really what they talked about the most with him, what they actually sat in his house a couple times and fleshed out the plot for and the arc and how it would marry with the canon and the books, was the RPG. So while the strategy game did something very bold, it took a lot of risks. It tried to tell the story of Westeros centuries before the events that take place in the show that people are familiar with now and folks who've read the books. The Game of Thrones, the RPG, it takes place concurrently or parallel with the events of like the first and second books, and folks will find so many references and instances of characters who they'll be familiar with, and that's really because this is where the heart and soul of Cyanide's efforts have gone.
Wow, excellent. So in that respect, there's a lot of homage to the books, not necessarily the TV show, correct?
Oh, yeah. People are going to find a lot of things they come across in the books that are that maybe they wanted to know a little bit more about certain characters, and you get to see them live out kind of outside of the typical POV view that takes place in the books.
Okay, first of all, we've been bad hosts. We have refreshments coming. We just got some lemon cakes in the oven.
Oh, those look delicious.
Yeah. Stoat pie as well.
I can hardly wait.
Oh my gosh, the smell of those. Lemon cakes are my favorite, thank you. Yeah.
And we have a cask of Arbor Red and Dornish wine as well. So,
I prefer gold myself.
All right, we'll get an order in for that. Just in related to what you said, how is George R. R. Martin being related to the story storyline and providing material that might be canon?
Well, I mentioned how the thing began, how the inception of the project took place. The developers, basically the producers, the directors of the project, went to George Martin's house. They sat down with him on more than one occasion. And what they, basically the evolution of the idea was that, you know, obviously a lot of things happen in each of the books in terms of people who come and go, in terms of significant developments. And I think a decision that was made early on to avoid stepping on anything that would be considered canon, to avoid becoming, whenever I think about writers trapping themselves in bottles, is I think about like Enterprise, the Star Trek series, where everyone said, let's write ourselves into like a 30-year period of time where so basically what they wanted to do was to tell a story that is at once fresh and new but is entirely grounded in what exists. And so what they did was they worked with George R. R. Martin to came up with two lead protagonists who would be original for this title, Mors Westford and Alistair Sarwick. But of course, their story takes place in Westeros, and they interact with characters like Cersei and Varys. And what they wanted to do was to create realistic, believable arcs within the canon, within the mythos, and have them come across characters and go through locations that will kind of create the perfect gaming experience for the Game of Thrones fan. And really, in coming up with everything they could and couldn't do, George R. R. Martin was involved in that kind of creating arcs that were appropriate and pushed kind of the envelope and created what we think of as like a new book, really. An experience that is authentically Game of Thrones but stands apart and is kind of fresh from the specific storylines of the books.
Great. I guess that's kind of related to why you created River Spring and Castlewood and new territories to explore, but without being bottled down to existing locations.
I think the idea was that there are a lot of adaptations of movie and TV that or book or literature that I think they struggle to break away from just simply retelling or regurgitating what's there. And a lot of times maybe that's exactly what the fans want, but I think the goal was to create something that is a new experience that just feels like the book. So the reason there are these new areas is because in addition to new protagonists, there are new characters that you'll come across. Their things are very shades of gray in Game of Thrones. So there'll be a lot of the same political games and the strife and the uncertainty that you find in the books, you find in the game as well. And the opportunity to create that uncertainty by introducing new characters who you really don't know, you don't know their motivations, and you find out what their role is in really the Game of Thrones. I think that's really one of the fun things that you can get when you introduce new characters and new locations.
I'm a little curious as far as the characters are concerned. So I know that we get these two distinct characters in their stories. As far as the RPG element of the game goes, how extensive is character customization? You'd mentioned before that there are some games that are based off of other franchises that are pretty much don't offer you very much flexibility in terms of the interpretation. I know the Lord of the Rings RPGs are kind of like that. They basically give you a clone of every character from the movies, and then there's really no customization, no skill choosing or adjusting. Is that something that comes into play in Game of Thrones?
The character customization is fairly deep in Game of Thrones. you get multiple classes to choose from that have multiple skills and multiple ability trees. Basically, as you go through the game, you'll be able to customize each character. So pretty much it'll be different for every playthrough. There's no point in the game where it starts to feel stale as far as what you're able to add to your character. You basically level up through the game, and at each level you become significantly more powerful. But at the same time, you're able to do new and unique things as you go along.
So you don't at any point actually customize the face or the phenotypical characteristics of the character. That's not really what the character customization is about. It's not character creation.
Right. For the skills.
Right. The analogy I would come up with is something like The Witcher, where obviously the look of the protagonist and their general role is set, but you can customize how they fight. The idea of stances, the idea of there's these different subclasses that basically dramatically change how your character handles themselves in combat. And then, as Scott mentioned, you have skill trees that you can advance beyond. And then there's a certain point in the game where you can decide to either multi-class or you could just continue to kind of build upon the path that you've already chosen, right?
Yeah. But kind of similar to Dragon Age,
right.
The Dragon Age specializations, you can choose these new trees, and you can either go in an entirely different direction, or you can just specialize in what you've already chosen.
And anyone who's played the old Dungeons & Dragons, the D&D-based Troika or Black Isle games, where at the very end you can kind of give yourself an advantage or a disadvantage, you kind of have that as well, where you can maybe you can get extra skill points per level, but for every one of those that you choose, they have a different kind of grade in terms of how much of an advantage it is, and you have to balance that with an equal disadvantage or not combination of disadvantages. So you can kind of challenge yourself in certain ways to meet your gameplay style. If you want to be, if you want to level up in a certain way or have an advantage when it comes to leveling up, you may have to give up a resistance to something in the game, which, you know, as a role-playing game, as a genre fan, I've always found that fun.
Absolutely, yeah. That's I like the idea that you said that each playthrough is different depending on the level of customization that you opt for with the skills. Does that also hold true for choices that you make in the storyline? Because I know that that's a big component of A Song of Ice and Fire.
We have to be careful here so we don't spoil anything, but there are some very major decisions that are made throughout the course of the game. So you can definitely get very different results on subsequent playthroughs.
And I will say that there are a lot of instances and decisions that carry far more weight, I think, than they would in other RPGs. I think it's very true to the spirit of Game of Thrones, where if someone just wandered into the throne room and just totally spoke out of their rear end and said something wrong, there could be disastrous consequences. And I think the same holds true where if you're not very cunning and smart about how you're choosing to answer based on the choices you have and based on who you're talking to, things could kind of take a turn for the worse.
This is a bit detailed, but is there like a good evil alignment in the way of, like, you know, with Mass Effect, the Paragon Renegade thing? Or I was just thinking, like, you know, Fable, you as you make pure decisions, you change
Banes and appear on your Halo.
I kind of hated that, but I'm just curious.
There's no direct reflection of basically your overall karma, I guess you'd call it. Again, everything is just kind of reflected in how the story plays out. But as the player, you'll definitely kind of feel whether what you're doing is a good choice or an evil choice.
And there are some ambiguous shades of gray moments too.
Yeah,
where
very true to the Game of Thrones universe.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of games where there are obvious good evil moments, and in Game of Thrones, in the RPG, you have those uncomfortable moments where you really kind of don't know.
You kind of have to choose between doing the honorable thing and the right thing. And that's something that's really reinforced throughout the story.
Yeah, and you never do see that in a lot of video games. It's always the obvious right choice or the wrong choice. But like, as far as the books are concerned, it's never that simple, you know? So
exactly.
I think that's really interesting that you guys have incorporated that.
As a gamer, I still remember in the first Mass Effect, and I'll just say it's a spoiler for anyone who hasn't played the first Mass Effect, the moment I had to make a choice of which of two characters would die.
Who did you leave?
I'm pretty sure I saved Ashley.
I had no love for Caden.
Caden, no, I mean he was the dust in my he was defective. I mean, like, he had headaches all the time, and she seemed like good in a fight. But I was actually
crushing on Caden pretty hard. I wanted to romance him, but I was always using Ashley in my battles because I had that girl team. You know, me, her, and Liara. We were tearing it up. So I saved her. I let my boyfriend die, and this bitch is mouthing off to me now in Mass Effect 3. I'm like, oh, I shouldn't have done that, but that's the beauty of that game, because it makes you wonder how it's going to affect the rest of the series.
Absolutely. It's one of those, like, put the controller down and really think about it moments. I think we're proud to say Game of Thrones has those kinds of moments.
That's awesome. That's exciting. Amin, sorry, yeah. You had something?
Oh, yeah, just so you said the timeline is kind of based in the middle of Game of Thrones?
The story, like in the books, has kind of that divergent POV for the main characters. For one of the characters, the game actually starts before the events of the first book. But as the game goes along, you'll see things going on around you that will let you know that the timeline is coinciding with the events of the first book,
okay,
including some major events, which are huge spoilers. So from the book, that is. Yeah. So.
All right, I didn't want to actually mention the events, but do those events affect like your gameplay, like and what happens in the game?
For the most part, not overly much, except for one of the characters. How can I put this? The original Hand of the King. What happens to him in the beginning of the books kind of plays out with one of the characters' storylines.
Oh, that's really cool.
Delicately put.
I think that's really interesting to get you involved in different events that might or might not have been incredibly important to the reader at the time. But that's really interesting. So do you, as the character, like, cross paths with other famous characters from the canon? Are there cameos?
One of the things that we're very excited about, and I think for me personally, it adds a lot to the project. We hope it adds a lot for the fans. We have worked closely with not just the developers, and they've been able to work with George R. R. Martin, but we've also worked closely with HBO. The music from the show is in the game, and we're very excited to also say that we have the likeness of three of the big stars from the show and two of their voices. Unfortunately, one of them, the scheduling didn't work out, but Lord Commander Mormont of the Night's Watch, voiced by James Cosmo, the really gruff guy. I mean, for anyone who somehow is listening to this and hasn't seen the show, you might remember him as he's one of the older characters in Braveheart, but he just has that gruff accent, and it's so exciting the first time. And he appears very early in the game, but immediately you realize that this is something that's very steeped in the authenticity and very grounded in not just the books but the feel of the show as well. Varys the Spider, Conleth Hill, Hill, and he I think actually narrates the introductory scene. So kind of I've noticed a lot of the really cool season 2 trailers that have been airing right now for HBO, they've had Varys or Conleth Hill do the narration. His voice and the character is really perfect for that, and it's a really nice way to open the game up. And then Cersei Lannister, Lena Headey's likeness is in the game as well, which and her character, you know, not to give a spoiler, but plays a big role in the game.
Right.
I mean, and there are some smaller characters that you do also run across as well. So people will have to keep an eye out for that kind of.
So we were talking about how the Game of Thrones universe has a lot of shades of gray, right? Well, another aspect of the Game of Thrones universe it's for adults, right? There's adult things going on. Is there anything of that in the game?
Yeah, this is the game is M-rated.
Yes,
it's definitely adult content. Everything from the language to a couple of the locations. There may or may not be brothels in the game.
At the wall, maybe.
Molestown.
There's this definitely, and not just that, but just the overarching theme, as we've already kind of touched upon, that whole, it's not just clear right and clear wrong. That shade of gray is definitely more of an adult concept, and it's definitely prevails throughout the entire game.
And you know, the tone of the game is a very dark one, much like the books. I think the same feeling that people had maybe when they finished the first book or when they watched the end of the first season. It's kind of like, you know, trying to catch your breath, especially the shock of things that maybe happened towards the end of both of those. I think you folks are going to walk away from the game much the same way when they ultimately finish it. Everything has been designed from the narrative standpoint to have a very profound impact and avoid a lot of the cliches and a lot of the typical genre expectations that folks expect. Things aren't quite as cookie cutter. The impression at the end will be a lasting one, and it'll be lasting for a lot of reasons I think that are different than most games. Definitely mature in content and tone.
Great. I just wanted to go over just the very basic details on the game, as in platform and that sort of thing. So what's the platform, release date, and tell us about the bonus art book?
Sure, and thank you for pointing that out. Well, Game of Thrones, the RPG, is going to come out for Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, and downloadable for PC via Steam, and possibly other digital distribution hubs, but that'll be May 15th. And we're very excited at select retailers while limited supplies last. We are doing a Game of Thrones art book. And visuals from the game, we're calling it. And it's 64 pages, full color. It's a hardbound art book. It stands 8.5 inches wide. Now, that would be a hell of an art book. Holy crap. 8.5 inches wide. 11 inches tall. Basically a letter-sized art book. And we've poured a lot of, and the developers have too, of the essence and soul, all of their passion for the series. I mean, I was really impressed by the dedication and the passion of the developers for this property. They made a game happen before anyone had Game of Thrones who hadn't read the books and was a hardcore fan on, you know, they saw it. It wasn't even on the map yet. HBO hadn't started with the show, and they really pursued. And you can see that in all of the concept art and the sketches and the renders, and all of that's in there with their notes. There's this really cool photograph of the dev team signed by George R.R. Martin with a little dedication. And we wanted to throw everything in there and make it a very special treat, not just for the folks who pick up the game, but for, you know, I mean, for Game of Thrones fans too. So that's for folks who pre-order, where there's going to be a cutoff date for that. That'll definitely be a limited supply thing. And we're hoping that folks enjoy that when they ultimately pick the game up on May 15th. And the game will be retailing for the MSRP will be $59.99. I think PC pricing is TBD.
But I was going to say, I think it's really cool because normally the art books and things like that, those are involved in like a deluxe or collector's edition at an additional cost. But you guys are releasing it as a pre-order bonus, which I think is a really good incentive, you know, for people to get orders in.
Yeah, as a company, we know we're the underdog in almost everything we do. We really look at it in two ways. First of all, there's so many of us who are Game of Thrones fans. We wanted to do something special, and we looked at a deluxe edition. But you know, there's something a little exclusive about a deluxe edition. There's something where, you know, you eliminate the people who there's like tons of games coming out, and I mean, there's big games coming out on May 15th of all things. Folks don't have just hundreds and hundreds of dollars to do this. So what we wanted to really do was look for a way to reward everyone who picks the game up. And, you know, we think about ways where, you know, for us it's best if someone buys the game at launch, and for us it's best if obviously they're not pirating it. So we as a company, we always try to do something like this, and we're really excited that we can do something so special. You know, we talk about it as pretty much the best pre-order gift we've ever done. The quality, the end cost for us, but it's worth it. I just got the Blu-ray myself. Season 1 just came in. So we're kind of hardcore here, and we're excited to give that same feeling to the fans. Hopefully they get the game, they crack it open, they kind of smell the manual, and then they smell the art book, because, that's usually what I do.
So in terms of famous territories, there's the Wall. Is there any other territories that you can name drop that'll be seen in the game?
Oh, well, of course there's King's Landing, and that plays a very large role in both characters' storylines. And not just like a random location, but very specific with I don't know how much
you know, if it's on the edge of being it's okay, you can say it.
Yeah, you get to go inside the Red Keep. You do see the throne up close and personal.
Cool.
All of its jagged glory. And you traverse throughout King's Landing, like places like Flea Bottom, Shataya's. So yeah, King's Landing plays a huge role throughout the game.
I am super pumped about that. I mean, there's something to be said for the strategy RPG, which, you know, utilizes a lot of the familiar houses and the mechanisms that I think were represented in the board game. But, you know, for you as a fan of Song of Ice and Fire to actually be able to traverse these locations and be immersed in this world as and to that level of detail, you know, in King's Landing, going to these locations that you've read about, I think is really, really fascinating. Did you guys focus on a lot of NPC interactions and dialogue? Is there a good amount of dialogue in this game?
There's a very extensive amount of dialogue. As part of been one of my tasks is to make sure that everything comes out all right in the end in that regard. But yeah, there's definitely, everywhere you go, there's going to be characters that you'll meet and characters from the book and the TV show. And all of them, we feel, have a very good dialogue set.
Tons of NPCs to actually have full interactive dialogue with, and there are also the passing NPCs who will say something, but it you'll hear that, you'll walk by conversations, you'll walk by people who are saying mumbling things to themselves as you walk by. The atmosphere is a huge part of what makes the show, and we believe it's a huge part of what makes the game, and that was really a huge effort.
I genuinely like look forward to walking past a person who's like gossiping about Renly's sexuality or something. That's what I assume they do in King's Landing. You know, it's just to talk about the famous people. But about how many hours do you think that it would take the game? Is it a particularly long campaign? I know there's probably a lot of side quests and everything involved, but
you know, it depends on the play style. I think we could say it's somewhere between 20 to 30 hours. There are decisions the players will make when maybe they want to play it again and see how things happen differently. But you know, not taking that into account, I think we could say 20 to 30 hours.
Okay. Right.
Sorry,
we're getting some live questions right now.
Oh, cool.
from Facebook, but one of our listeners wants to know if you could compare it to a current RPG on the market, what is it close to?
I think Ram and I actually disagree on this one, but
are you going to say Dragon Age?
I would say Dragon Age.
Yeah, in terms of the combat, and we're going to be putting a video out very soon that'll give folks a really good look at exactly how the a lot of the in-game action, especially the combat. Dragon Age is, I'll concede it. In a lot of ways, it's very similar, but I do think that the look and feel, a lot of the menus, a lot of how the character evolves, the skill trees, a lot of that, I think you can see that developers took cues and were inspired by the success that CD Projekt had with The Witcher 1 and 2. I think in terms of the tone of games, I really think The Witcher is very similar to Game of Thrones. So I feel like it's kind of two games that you can.
Yeah, I think it speaks well for the game itself that we are disagreeing about this.
Yeah.
We're both getting a different vibe from it, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, the problem with releasing an RPG is that it'll always be compared to something else that's out there. And a lot of people have been saying that this looks similar to Dragon Age because of the combat, but I just need to know that it will be better than Dragon Age 2, which sometimes I'm still upset about.
I think it's a lot less. I think it's less. Yeah, I think it's less brown than Dragon Age 2.
I think I'm the only one that defends that game.
I will say one of the cool things that we haven't talked about it too much, but it will be featured in the video we'll have coming out soon. Is the combat? You have this active pause system where, you know, in Dragon Age and a lot of the Bioware RPGs, to use an example, you're able to just pause the action outright. In fact, there's a setting where the action pauses as soon as you have line of sight with an enemy. It's in other D&D games too. And one of the cool things is that you cannot stop things outright. You will very often in Game of Thrones be overwhelmed by a number of enemies. I mean, you'll be going up against 3, 4, 5 enemies at a time, and maybe you've got one person alongside you, but what you end up having to do is to use the active pause system to slow things down, and you have a number of actions that you can queue, and you can queue up which of the skills that you want, along with maybe a normal attack, along with maybe one of your special moves. In the case of Alistair and Moore, they have very different skill sets, very different abilities in combat. And then you kind of unslow things down and let them play out. But the cool thing about watching everything, I mean, you the moment you enter the menu, things are still happening just slowly. And you see the sword coming in at your character's head. And I think that tension, that intensity, that urgency that really makes a lot of sense. I don't think it would be Game of Thrones if you could just stop it and go get a hoagie from the fridge and, you know, open a bag of chips. Like, you really, it's intense. And I think it stays true to the spirit of the show and the books. Mm.
I think it's so it's basically, I mean, it's tactical, but there's a level of action and speed to it.
To be clear, you don't attack, and attacks are not mapped necessarily to, it's not like a real-time action experience. It's definitely a true RPG in the sense that you are issuing the commands, or you're kind of choosing, making strategic decisions on what your character will do. But as things play out, it's certainly fast-paced and it's certainly frantic.
Sounds good.
Are there save points or something? What's the mechanism for like taking a break?
3 hours between save point loads.
just like our Persona game.
Right? I mean, we could have made it very realistic, and if you died, that would have been it. But throughout the game, you can pretty much save any time that you're not in combat or in the middle of one of the dialogue scenes. And there is also a lot of auto saves. On top of all that, there are 3 different difficulty settings. So basically, anybody who sits down to play the game will be able to play it at their own pace. But that challenge will still be there as they progress through the game.
There are no save mechanisms or limitations that would frustrate gamers. No one's going to complain, I think, about the saving system. It's pretty generous in terms of letting you stop and preserve wherever you were at any point.
Are there escort missions? This is really important to me. you don't have to answer that.
You can say next question.
Yeah, you and Sky, if you want to take the fifth, you can take the fifth.
Yeah.
Scott has turned a color red. I have not seen him take on. He can answer it.
There's no real frustrating kind of escort mission. Basically, anybody that's in your party at any given time is going to be fighting alongside of you. So really, at no point is there going to be that dead weight. Resident Evil 4 with Ashley.
I'm trying to think of all the games where suddenly the game went to an end screen. I was doing fine. It's like you let so and so die.
Actually, Catherine had a
right. Yeah, that's right. Like that's right.
You're just like, how do you take so much damage so quickly? But no, I mean that's good to know that it's not a super frustrating sort of mechanism. I think. Did you have something else, Amin?
Just a couple of quick questions. One was I saw. In one of the trailers, a character very similar to Maester George, perhaps? Not sure.
Scott, you're still red, man.
Well, as Aram mentioned, George did play a very important role in the making of the game. So
you may have not have been mistaken. Okay. you may have seen well.
Mayhaps.
Very observant. Yeah.
And do you guys have DLC planned?
There are no plans at this time. Right. Now the focus has been on, I mean, we're working very hard to get the game out by May 15th. And, I think we made a decision a while ago that we just weren't going to think about DLC. And the priority is delivering a game on May 15th. That is, when people pick it up, they finish it, they set it down, they'll feel incredibly satisfied no matter what.
Yeah, to just create a full experience as opposed to...
DLC is downloadable content? Is that what
yes.
It is? Okay, just for those that...
Come on, Amin.
Is there Valyrian steel in the game?
Oh, that's a good question.
As a matter of fact, there is. And it does play a very key role in completing the game. So it actually is kind of cool. In the game, in the series, or in the TV show and the books, Valyrian steel is typically a sword. But as the player goes through the game, they might find that there are different uses for it.
Dot, dot, dot.
Dot, dot.
So are you guys feeling...
Don't shave with it, though, right?
Gillette Valyrian.
That's actually one of the endings. If you make it a razor,
yes.
That's just the game right there. Game over.
At the end.
It's like a Goosebumps Choose Your Own Adventure book. So are you guys feeling a lot of pressure and excitement from creating a game that is so dedicated to a very hardcore subset of fans? I mean, you know, the fan base for Song of Ice and Fire is massive, and it's growing every day, what with Game of Thrones. becoming very, very visible. So I was just wondering. I mean, it's a lot of pressure, right, to deliver something to these angry neckbeards.
I don't know if I can say I will use that term. I think we're incredibly excited, and you know, I think there's always the understanding that we're dealing with what could very well be, come April 1st, the hottest show on the planet. I was blown away by season one. I actually bought all the books. I have not found a moment to read them, and I'm frustrated because I know that as soon as I go on Twitter on April 2nd, there'll be like a million people trying to spoil things for me. But myself personally, I know a lot of the folks on the team, it's really just excitement to be a part of something so big, something that's truly a phenomenon. We really want to deliver something that everyone says this is an authentically Game of Thrones experience. I feel like I was able to play a part in Westeros, and it is very complimentary to the books and the show that I have read or seen to this point. So you know, that's what we're excited for. I think it's a huge community, and we're as passionate as they are. So we do have high expectations too, high hopes.
Awesome. Well, I'm really excited about it, and not to sound like a total tool, but while you guys were talking, I went ahead and pre-ordered it on Amazon. I did not want that book to get away from me, so I'm definitely really excited about it as a huge RPG fan myself, both the Japanese and the Western ones. I mean, it's good just to play an RPG that's good enough, you know, functionally as a game, but to throw in that level of detail with Song of Ice and Fire and that level of collaboration with George R. R. Martin. I think personally my neck beard and I will enjoy it. So
I think people around the office call me just functional enough. That's the insult.
Did you have anything else, Amin?
Two last questions, then I'm done. So maybe the tough ones left for the end, but they have to be asked. The one is, and I know this is probably no because it's really uncommon for cross-platform RPGs to have this, but do you think the game will be modifiable or customizable at all?
You're talking about moddable on PC?
Yeah.
No, there are no plans for that. I know that there's titles, you know, Skyrim is one where, you know, a lot of work went into putting out a construction kit, but this is very much a narrative focused, a lot of work has gone into designing the game experience around this crafted story, and the focus hasn't really been so much to offer that. So unfortunately not.
Okay.
Amin just wants a patch to make everybody naked like Sims.
one another question again. Neither of the characters are female. So what is there in this to attract female viewers who aren't like Mimi, who are already a big gamer? Are there like female NPCs? Is there storyline or romance or something in there that can get the female market?
Some of the most important characters in the game are women. As you said, the two main characters are both men, but basically their stories revolve around women.
Yeah, they actually serve as agents that circle around a major plot points and major NPCs who happen to be women. So with having the two male protagonists, one may get the impression that it's a very male centric or very the game has a slant. But we actually believe once you get into the story, you'll realize that the most significant characters in the game could very well be set to be female.
Great.
Okay. Awesome. That's good. I feel so bad we've taken up so much of your time already, but it's really nice getting all of this information. I know we browsed a lot of articles, you know, about the upcoming game, but it's good to get a lot of detail on what you guys are putting out there on May 15th.
We appreciate the chance to talk about the game. We appreciate you guys being so interested in it, and obviously your listeners. And hopefully it was an entertaining listen, and hopefully it got people more pumped up for the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, take a cask of Arbor Gold we got here.
Yeah.
Make sure you use a taste tester. You never know. So.
I'll have a ROM taster first.
And I am sure come May that, you know, the podcast will end up doing a review of the game. And by the podcast, I mean me for sure. But I'm the biggest gaming nerd out of all of them, though.
Oh, okay. I have one last question, which might be cut, but it needs to be asked because they demanded it. Is there a member of House Manwoody in the game?
Oh, yeah. Why did I forget that question?
Manwoody?
Yeah, if you look at the appendix, there's actually a house, Manwoody. So you go take a look.
There are
this
some...
is what this is what happens when you podcast about Song of Ice and Fire for 4 years.
I just want anyone to know, anyone in Southern California, if you want to play Texas Hold'em against someone who really can't conceal the bluff, play against Scott Williams, because he's turning all different. He's like Pepe Le Pew here. He's really trying not to say things. Go ahead, Scott.
Well, I can't guarantee an appearance by House Manwoody. There are a few interesting names that were culled from the books. Again, a watchful player that's familiar with the books will be able to catch some of
Great. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for having us. It's been great.
And for listeners who are curious, you can pre-order the games on Amazon, of course, which I just did. And do you guys have a Twitter that anyone can follow, or
well, you know, we there's no dedicated Twitter for the game. You can go ahead and follow us. We're Atlas USA. We do have a dedicated Facebook page for the game. Folks can go to the game's official website, gameofthrones-thegame.com, and if they want to go to the Facebook page, it's just /Facebook from there. And you know, we're trying to build a community around the game and get folks who are interested in the books and the show to talk about what they're most excited about. Hopefully, we'll see some of your listeners on there. The website is full of a lot of content that we haven't released anywhere else. A lot of interactive kind of web quests you can do to get web exclusive content. So if anyone has a minute or two, go ahead and check the website out. Hopefully you'll feel it does nothing but get you more amped for the game.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much, Aram and Scott, for joining us tonight. And you know, good luck with the release of the game. I hope everything goes well for y'all.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Cool. Bye.
Do you want to go ahead and start a meme, or am I supposed to do this whole?
We'll have you do the intro. I think is what.
Oh God, I hate this. What episode?
You are the queen of the podcasters. So.
Oh yeah, it's true. let's see, episode 70. Are we getting it out this week or next week?
I can get it out this week. Yeah.
You could?
Yeah.
Okay, so March 4th.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Are you recording a meme?
Let me just.
All right.
Yeah, it's on. Yeah.
Robin, like when I ask you why Persona 4 was so hard, we can take that out.
Clearly, you weren't kidding about being huge nerds.
I actually yeah. Worked on Persona 4, so.
Did you? Oh God, yeah. It was hard. But all the Persona games are, as far as I'm concerned, they're great though. Out of curiosity, what happened with you and Rex then?
With me and Rex. Oh, this part where he's gonna lose it, right?
Yeah.
On the beach. I think I maxed out my stats in the positive for negotiation
Paragon.
Like, yeah, so I think I talked him down, but I did have one playthrough where I went total jerk, and I things took a turn for the worst in that scene. I think I still saved Ashley though.
No, I couldn't do that to Rex. Caden, yeah. Rex, no.
I killed Rex. I live with it every day.
Hey, podcasters. I'm one of your new listeners, having been sitting in bed for a week and had nothing to do but listen to every single one of your podcasts. And I just wanted to say that it's been really, really, well, honestly, it's hilarious, because I didn't think I'd ever find people on this earth quite as perverse as I am. And as somebody just newly getting into the series, it's really inspired me to go back and, like, read the books more intently. and all that stuff. So basically, you guys are awesome. The series is awesome. And if you ever want to, you know, hit someone up to join you guys in the podcast and talk about random things and generally be awkward, as apparently I am, then, you know, join your forums as Claudiometer, and you guys will see me around. So, yeah, keep casting.